Well, welcome. And as you can see by the setup here, this is designed to be pretty casual. We're just going to have a chat. And there will be time for questions. There are microphones around the room. We'll get to that. But first, we want to cover a few issues with our guests here. Now, I do know all of your names. I'm just going to read from here to make sure I get your titles right. Diana Williams, founder and executive chairman of Fernwood Women's Health Clubs. And over on the couch here, from my left to right, we have David LaFerla, who's the Managing Director of NegotiAction, and also Michael Poynton, who is the Founder and General Manager of Mojo Motorcycles. Say that three times fast. Now, we're here to talk about entrepreneurship and young entrepreneurship, and what I have written in front of me is entrepreneurs or just business smarts. What's the difference? And it's an obvious thing to talk about, I think. What makes a good entrepreneur? Born with it or not? And the other thing that I want to know is this something which is driven by a burning passion for a good idea or a higher principle? Or is it just, to steal a line, get rich or die trying? So, Diana, I might ask you first, if you wouldn't mind. I have your biographies here, but I'm going to ask each of you to run through your background and your business and how it came about and how it works.
Okay, right. Well, I joined a gym in the 1980s. Before that, I was a stay-at-home mum. With two teenage kids, I hadn't been working all of the time my kids were growing up. I'd left in those days, you left work and raised your family, so I had no business experience. But when I joined the gym, I got so excited about the benefits of exercise and what it could do to change your life. And I noticed the gym that I went to had a lot of women that would go, but they never came back because it wasn't an environment that a lot of women would appreciate. So I got the idea to start a gym for women. And I didn't have any business experience, as I said. I went and got qualified as a gym instructor so that I'd be able to do this, and I started a business. I've got to say, though, it was really, at that time, it wasn't a business I started up. It was something that I wanted to do because I wanted to make a difference, and it was something I was passionate about. So the business came afterwards. I soon learned a lot of business skills throughout the time that I was in business, and as it grew, because I'm a very I love a challenge, wanting to make it better all the time. It just grew from there, and I saw an opportunity to make it bigger and to expand. And we moved on, and I went into franchising, and basically I haven't left it alone since then. I just see an opportunity, and I want to make it better and bigger.
So how many years now?
16 years. Yeah.
And how many outlets or locations?
68.
And in which countries?
we're just in Australia. We're actually opening in New Zealand this year. So we're starting international expansion.
And you're looking at South Africa as well?
Absolutely, and Canada. So there's a few countries we're talking to.
And dare I ask, annual turnover?
About 84 million.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is, about 3,000 employees. It is a beautiful thing. It's not all my money, it's turnover.
That's all right, you know, it still counts. All right, thank you. David, NegotiAction. What's the go?
What's the go? I guess I reflect back to when I was a kid. I've been playing around since I was a kid, thinking about how things work and how things could be improved. I grew up in a family business and went to uni and I studied science, and in many ways was absolutely invigorated by the things that we were thinking about, but frustrated that we weren't actually doing anything with it. We were thinking a lot, but not actually applying it to what I considered to be a real application. I also then, at the time, I worked in industry, and I saw completely the opposite. I saw a lot of people making things and producing without thinking clearly about it, and decided that there was an opportunity to make a difference. I worked for a large management consulting practice.
Which one?
It was the IBM Consulting Group, which at the time made a major move in Australia to become the dominant firm. It didn't succeed, and there were good reasons why it didn't succeed. I learned a lot whilst working there. I learned a lot about what not to do. That's one of the key lessons, and that's not a criticism of IBM or large consulting companies, but in many ways I feel that you learn a lot from failure as opposed from learning everything from success. The thing that I was very passionate about was working with organisations and making a difference, and that's when I founded Negotiaction. That was founded in 1998, and it grew dramatically, essentially from inception, and we attracted clients who were keen to play the game, keen to think about the rules, think about changing the way the business is done.
So, given that, how would you describe what Negotiaction does?
It's
almost like a lateral thinking think tank for hire.
There's a lot of lateral thinking, but there's a lot of lateral doing. It's not about thinking, it's about thinking translating into the doing. So if I think about our clients and what they are about, they're about understanding strategy and the way that games emerge and who's playing which game and what are the rules. You know, what are the rules of the game that guide their thinking, and how can they break those rules if they want to succeed or play by the rules if they need to? It's about strategy, it's about marketing, and it's about sales for us. Those three things are linked. That's consistent with our clients. And one of the, two of the areas that we're being pulled into a lot more is financial services and technology commercialization. That's not the limit of it, but we're excited about the games that are being played in those two areas.
Is that because there are a couple of the sectors in the economy which are booming overall?
Yeah, people are coming forward to say, hey, this is moving really quickly. What worked not 5 years ago or 1 year ago, but what worked a few weeks ago isn't working anymore. What do we need to do to rethink the way that we run our business and see the opportunity? And that's what good entrepreneurs do, and I'll touch on that later, but entrepreneurs tend to take that approach. They want to see what's working, what isn't, and fill the gap.
And business is good without getting too personal?
Business is great for us. We're growing dramatically. Our team is growing very quickly, and we've launched an initiative more recently called Negotiation Challenge, where we're taking some really bright minds from universities, University of Melbourne, RMIT, Swinburne, and working with those people to impact our clients' thinking. So it's a two-way flow. Our clients are very pragmatic. They're very practical. Our associates are very good thinkers, and our people within the practice are really good at connecting the two. So we're coming up with some outcomes that we otherwise wouldn't do and what our clients otherwise wouldn't do.
And how big is the practice?
Well, currently we have 17, 18 in the core of the practice. Yeah, it started out with one person. And so whilst it's... I still consider that to be very, very boutique and very small. I can see significant growth since day one, and that will continue as far as I can see.
All right. Now, Michael, I don't want to embarrass you, but it's the obvious question. How old are you?
I'm 22.
And tell us about Mojo Motorcycles. I couldn't say it again.
Mojo Motorcycles. Well, basically, our company, we specialise in more the development but also the importation of Chinese manufactured pit bikes.
Which are what?
Pit bikes. It's a niche market, and they're quite difficult to explain. Actually, most of you guys probably saw one shot when you walked in over in the foyer there. But to put it as simple as possible, they're basically a scaled-down motocross bike, and believe it or not, they are used mainly by adults. Doesn't make much sense, I know. Fully grown adults run around on mini bikes intended for children, but that's basically what the sport is. What we try to do, this sport, it's meant to be about fun, and the cost that used to be involved in getting into this sport was quite expensive. The more traditional way that people used to become involved was to buy a brand name bike like a Honda or a Yamaha. Then they basically used to pour large amounts of money into the modifications. We basically saw a gap in this market, and what we're trying to do is basically capture this market of people that are searching for a quality built bike minus this hefty price tag.
So you customise them where previously they would have had to.
Yeah,
customise them and sell them retail.
Pretty much. Like, we have a lot of, we pretty much have 110% control over the bike that we import from China. We've just recently finalised a joint venture over in China. Actually, when I say recently, it was about 12 months ago. And it basically involved our company going over there with the idea of developing these new bikes. We invested money into our cooperating factories, mainly just for the assembly side of things. Our company here, we have 110% control over all the engineering. We correspond with the Chinese by engineering drawings and engineering samples. We basically just send everything to China for the mass production. And we also organise our own parts suppliers. We have contacts, we form partnerships with companies in Italy, Thailand, Taiwan, And we basically use these guys to sort of help us with the development, and we also organise the parts supplies directly to China. We do all the engineering here, and we just basically utilise them for the mass production facilities.
And it is fair to say that this was a real niche?
Yeah, it was. Like, when we started, it was definitely a niche. It's, I guess the market sort of became a little bit more saturated now. We're sort of slowly starting now to enter international markets. We've been developing these new bikes, as I said, for about 12 months, and we're sort of at the stage now where we're about to go into mass production. We had some samples completed for us in February, which we displayed over in Indianapolis in America. And we sort of went to this trade fair with the intention to get a US distributor, but these bikes were just completely different. Like, a lot of people think of Chinese bikes, excuse my language, but it's crap. And these bikes were just basically completely different, and the response that we got, we're blown away. Like, we're currently negotiating, in some cases, finalised distributorship agreements in UK, Portugal, Germany, France, and, of course, America.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, did this stem from an interest that you personally had in this type of bike growing
up? It did. Like, I used to race motocross when I was a little bit younger. But it more sort of...
Not anymore.
Not anymore, no.
When you were a little bit
younger.
When
I was a bit younger. I still ride the bikes.
You're killing me.
No, I think it's damn... Like, obviously, it's good to be interested in what you're doing. Like, we love motorbikes, and that sort of helps us. We've got the passion there about motorbikes. But we're also very involved in the business side of things. I was halfway through an engineering degree when I came into this business, and my partner was halfway through a commerce degree.
So you put the two halves together.
We put the two halves together, and... It's basically, it's worked well for us. Yeah.
Very good. Well, I'll ask you the key question then, the one that's on the sheet here. Entrepreneurs or just business smarts, born or bred? Diana?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's created with a passion. I don't know that there... I think that the thing that's born into entrepreneurs, in my opinion, is probably the fact that they love a challenge. They're not happy with the status quo. They want to keep improving, and they see opportunities to do things. So they're lateral thinkers, and that's probably the part that's born into them. And then the other thing is that may never emerge unless they find something that they're really passionate about, that they really want to do, and then they take that and drive that. The passion for it brings out all these other qualities that the entrepreneur has that, you know, that makes them develop whatever it is that they're doing, whether it's a business or...
So a bit of both then?
I think it is a bit of both, yeah.
You don't think it has to... From what you've just said, it doesn't necessarily have to be in business. You see these traits in people...
Oh, yeah, whether it's a sportsman or whatever. Whatever it is that you want to be the very best that you can be, and you want to be the most successful at it, it doesn't matter what it is, but
obviously it's about the drive.
It's about the drive and the passion and the wanting to be successful and the wanting to make it better all of the time and improving and looking for opportunities where you can get the edge and just get a bit more out of it.
Now, with your business,
yeah,
you obviously identified the niche.
Yeah.
And for someone of my age now, it seems a little odd that... There was a time when there wasn't a business like yours,
which
catered specifically to women in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
You obviously identified this niche. Mm. Was this a burning passion for you that you saw it and thought, yes, someone should do that?
Yeah,
but was it get rich quick or not so quick?
No, the money never really came into it. The money came into it when I needed the money to grow the business and I needed the money to be successful. And, you know, when I did it because I wanted to do it because I could see that there was a need for it and that people would benefit from it. And then when I started doing it, I enjoyed it so much, so I wanted to do more and I wanted to expand and open more clubs and I needed to employ people and I needed to make it better. I needed to get good people and I needed money to do that. So the money was the thing that I needed to make it happen, more so than for me to get rich.
And that was difficult for a while there?
Oh, hell yes. It was really difficult. Well, the fitness industry went belly up in the early 80s, and so there was absolutely no credibility with the financial institutions for anybody in the fitness industry. So borrowing money was totally out of the question. It was pretty much had to be organically grown. Every dollar that was made was poured back into the business, and obviously, and more, because you always needed to do more. So that was tough. And and being the entrepreneurial person that I am and wanting to improve things and make it better, you tend to do things before perhaps you really can afford to.
Because you have no choice?
You've got to grow to get to be a critical mass to be able to do the things that you want to do. So once you start, you've just got to keep going and keep pushing to get to that critical mass. And that's when it gets good, because then you can make the right decisions based on what you should do rather than based on what you can afford.
But that must be a pretty nerve-inducing.
Yeah, it's pretty stressful.
It was very stressful,
but it was enjoyable. The stress becomes enjoyable because it's a challenge, and once you overcome it, then that challenge becomes an achievement. So you feel as though you've accomplished something. So, the stress has become less as you get used to dealing with them, and you learn from those mistakes that you make, and so you become a stronger person and a better business person, and you learn the skills. So it's a self-growth thing as well.
Now, the elephant in the corner of the room in any discussion like this, was it harder for you because you're a woman?
I don't believe that it was. I know a lot of people, think that it might have been, but it was in my mind, not so much in men's minds. A lot of people ask me, do women, find it tougher? And I think that the issue is probably in women's minds, that they don't have the self-confidence, that they perhaps feel a little bit intimidated by men more so than the fact that I was a woman. I know I'm as intelligent and has got as much business acumen as a man does.
So basically you're saying there's no excuses?
No, that's right.
Yeah. Get out there and do it.
Yep. Mm.
David, born or bred entrepreneurs?
James, it's both. Firstly, I don't think we live in one world. I can stand shoulder to shoulder with a number of entrepreneurs and we see the world differently than if I was standing shoulder to shoulder with people who are very risk averse and have a very steady progress through their careers. We live in different worlds. That's the first thing. I think it's both born and bred, and the world that I see and the world that I see my clients see and my colleagues see is becoming increasingly complex. It's a real complex game. Entrepreneurs reveal themselves, so there's that born bit where they say, look, I behave like this, I think like this, I want to change the world. There's the born bit. But entrepreneurs can be made better. I don't think you can have entrepreneurs who are simply born and they just go ahead and do business.
But on the flip side, that would indicate that you can't have entrepreneurs who are simply bred either.
Correct. Can't be born because there are technical things you need to learn. You need to learn about some financial constructs. You need to think about markets in certain ways. You're not born with that ability. However, I don't think you can take anybody and make them the quintessential entrepreneur with as much training as possible.
You can't teach people risk-taking, for example.
You can enhance the way that they approach risk-taking. You can put concepts, you can put frameworks, you can immerse them in very risky ventures, and they get a flavour for how that can be applied and how they can do it. So I'm a big advocate for the two. The successes that we see are as a direct result of a really good combination between the two. And when I listen to Diana and also to Michael, that comes across to me, and I reflect on the things that I did when I started this practice and what we're doing as a team to grow the practice and to partner our clients, and those two things come out. The people that we're working with genuinely see the world spinning in a different way. That's why they're moving in. That's why they do what they do. They were born that way and they've enhanced it over time. So it's a two.
Which, and because you took a more conventional path to start with, as you alluded to before, that's obviously you believe that has assisted you in taking the entrepreneurial tendencies with which you were born.
I'm not sure that my story is a traditional one, because when it doesn't matter who I speak with, they look at me strangely and go, "You're weird. We wouldn't have done what you did." I speak to my colleagues from uni, and there is no way that they would do what I did. High risk.
Too risky?
Yeah, too risky, you know. Why do that? David, why do it? You know, there's a really nice safe path out there that the major firms will give you the training, they will give you the growth path. You know, you'll earn a nice salary, you'll have a really good application.
And is it as simple an answer as, well, why the hell not?
Basically, you've got to back yourself. That's not, when I listen, that's not arrogance, that's confidence. That's simply an extension of the individual, and that's the personality that comes to the fore here. I think you've just got to back yourself, you know, opportunity, back yourself. Don't take stupid risks, don't take unnecessary risks. You've got to take risks, but have the confidence and respond to the way you see the world spinning. And the way that Diana saw the world spinning is a different world now. You know, she's seeing it differently, I think.
She's helped change it.
She's helped change it, yeah. And we're seeing the world spin. Would I do now what I did then? No, because I've got to do it differently now. Yeah, so both.
But as you said before, you've got to find a different way of doing things every few weeks on some fronts now.
Yeah, you don't want to be same old. You know, you don't want to be like the others. You've got to put the spin. People are not going to engage with you unless you've got that degree of difference, you know, that special factor that'll say to them and give them confidence that, hey, I can work with you because I can see what you're seeing now, and we can go and pursue that outcome. We can generate wealth. And that's not just financial wealth, but that's one of the big things for a lot of our clients. You know, show me the money, but it's show me a lifestyle. Show me the satisfaction. Show me pizzazz. People have different cuts of what success means. So, you know, we see those as well.
I'll come back to that. That's something else I want to ask each of you. What's your definition of success? Mm. We'll get to that. Michael, a lot of young guys like bikes, and not many of them, perhaps none of them, have done the kind of thing that you've done. So, born or bred, is that something you had in you to think, well, no one's doing this, so I'll do it, where most other people would think, no one's doing that, and gee, isn't that a pity?
Mm. I might say that I sort of agree with what David was saying there. I think that people are born to become entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are obviously special people. They have their unique range of characteristics. But I think education is extremely valuable, and it's going to allow entrepreneurs to basically, or it's going to sort of foster their spirit of enterprise and also allow an entrepreneur to nurture an idea.
Is it about risk-taking?
Yes, of course. One of the characteristics which I believe are in all entrepreneurs is that they're very confident. They have a lot of self-confidence, and they back themselves 110%.
All right, let's get a little nasty for a second here. Do you look at other people and think, you're not taking a risk, you're not up to it? The majority of people, perhaps.
Yeah, look, I don't think everyone is an entrepreneur, and if everyone was the same, I guess the world wouldn't be as it is today. Risk-taking is definitely one of the key characteristics that are in entrepreneurs. Like, as I said, it sort of comes back down to their self-confidence and their ability to back themselves. And most entrepreneurs, they boast a can-do attitude. Nothing's too hard for an entrepreneur.
I'll ask all of you, do you need an element of cockiness to go out on your own, to take those risks? And inherently, does that mean that you do look at others and think, you guys, you're just going to, you know, earn a wage the rest of your life, and I'm not going to do that?
I don't think you look at it exactly that way. I mean, it's not cockiness as much as that you can see the picture. You know what you can see it there as clear as anything, and you can engage others to see it with you, and that's how you get to drive it. More so than saying, I'm better than you, and you don't take risks. It's just that it's not a risk to me, or to most entrepreneurs, it's not a risk because they actually can see that it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. So it's in their mind.
It's just the path.
It is the path to take. That's right. Exactly.
Mm.
Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm uncomfortable with arrogance and cockiness. I love passion and I love confidence. Maybe this is a product of the three entrepreneurs and others who are Australian entrepreneurs. You know, we have an approach that I find very refreshing when I go elsewhere around the world. We have this beautiful naivety that let's give it a go. And it kind of works. And I see others who have different cultural backgrounds, and I think to myself, I wouldn't do it like that. You know, I would disenfranchise a lot of people if I took that approach. People would find that just way too arrogant and confrontational, or a bit too lax and too tepid. You know, I have a certain range of style. It's passion and it's confidence and it's self-confidence. And it's actually not just self, it's confidence in others who are doing some interesting things.
Which inherently means identifying talent and feeling able to rely on others to get the job done.
I think the new wave is coming. Up until now, we've seen entrepreneurs. They've seen the opportunity, they've gone to pursue it. They've created the enterprise and they've employed, engaged people, they've worked with others. But I think what we will see more and more of is this collaborative entrepreneurism. People will start to link the organisations together. There's a bit of work being done on this now, and we're starting to see organisations around countries and around the world who are hooking up and saying, we'll play to our strengths, you play to yours, and I've got to have that confidence and I've got to have that respect.
Is that to an extent because entrepreneurial endeavours have to be able to increasingly compete with corporations? Or at least fit in with corporations in what they do and therefore have to have a bit of size about them?
I think it's both. We're seeing more and more relationships that didn't exist a few years ago emerge where corporations are saying, we need to outsource these functions, but we need to engage with other firms who are far more agile and more nimble and far more ambitious in certain areas so that we can enhance the way that we approach our markets or the way that we approach technologies or whatever the case may be. So I think that the way that the game is being played and the way that it's emerging will reveal a new kind of organisation. We won't see the kinds of organisations we're seeing today in the proportions that we are. We'll see far more defined relationships, and that will be moving. It'll be like the sisters holding hands to define the market, see the opportunity, pursue it, apply the technology, create the wealth, play to your strengths differently. I think that's what's happening now. We're only seeing the start of it. We'll see a lot more of it. And I know from what we're doing, we're part of it. We are driving part of that now with the relationships that we've got within negotiation.
Mm. Michael, do you have to be a little bit cocky to get away with this stuff?
No, I don't think so. Like I sort of I agree with what Diana was saying. It's not about cockiness. Entrepreneurs, they have this self-belief and they don't see it as a risk. They're basically 110% confident. They see an opportunity and they're basically willing to go for it. They can, even though the odds may be against them. I think this is one of the characteristics that entrepreneurs have, is that the odds may be against them, but they see this opportunity. And many people will say, you're stupid, what are you doing, this is risky, but they don't see it like that. They this self-confidence sort of allows them to see through this, and I guess in doing that, they're not really seeing it as a risk.
Well, Diana's spoken a little about some of the obstacles she faced along the way, and you've just mentioned that perhaps some people will look at you and think, this is silly, what are you doing? Did you come up against much of that?
Yeah, we certainly did. Not so much in our idea. I guess our main problems in starting the business at a young age, like we don't have a formal education as such. Me and my partner Josh, we're both very passionate about business. But I guess like starting the business at a young age, we were thrown into the deep end and it'll sink or swim. So as much as like we would love to sort of get a formal education, I think that the importance of an education, like 100% agree with, I think it's extremely important. What's basically happened to us is we've been thrown in and we've had this opportunity and we basically learned the hard way. Like I say to many people, my business partner Josh, we've been doing this for about 3 years now. He was halfway through a commerce degree. He looks after all the bookkeeping. And what he can do with the bookkeeping, like, it just blows me away. Like, I can use Myob, I can enter a sale.
Be careful.
That's neat. What Josh can do with Myob, like, I reckon if you're at uni, it's going to take you 10 years. Like, he's just been there and doing it. He's learned so quickly.
Do you agree? Is it something that you have to overcome, that people are sceptical?
Yeah. I think that people will always be sceptical, and that's not a disrespect to the enterprise and to the people behind it. It's simply that they can't relate to it.
So what that means is there's a little tendency there, isn't there, to sit there and think, yeah, well, you just got no guts.
You can't see the world the way that I see it.
All right, then.
Yeah. Mm. But I see people who aren't entrepreneurs doing some fantastic things. You know, they're creating wonderful enterprises, but they're doing it differently. And that's fantastic. That's just the way the world works. No cynicism, from my point of view at least, I can't see there's any disrespect from any party against another. It's simply a different frame of reference, a different way of approaching it.
Diana, is Australia a good place to be an entrepreneur?
Oh, I think so. I don't know what it would be like in another country, but I know in Australia we do give it a go, and we are probably very relaxed and we have a lot of faith. So there's a lot of opportunities in Australia. It's a young country, and there are an awful lot of opportunities, and it's a great country to be in. So, yeah, I definitely think it is. Well, it was good for me.
It worked all right, didn't it?
That's right, yes.
David?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Being an Australian, I was alluding to this earlier.
You spoke about cultural differences
before. Yeah, it's really good. Like, I can get along with somebody relatively easily, and I find that conceiving of opportunity and doing a deal here is relatively easy, if you can approach it in a certain way. If you have a certain rapport and a relaxed approach to it, I think that you're able to scope out and frame it and pursue it. There are a lot of barriers to that approach elsewhere. There are protocols that you need to follow. There
red
are
tape.
A lot of red tape, but a lot of invisible tape. Red tape's an issue, but there's the invisible tape, and it's a cultural thing. No, I'm not entitled to talk to you about this, and you're not entitled to talk to me. You'll need to speak to somebody else who will speak to that person who will then speak to me. In Australia, What a pain, absolutely. We tend to meet over a beer or a coffee on a Sunday and start talking about what we're doing and where the deal could be, where the opportunity is. Yeah.
Michael, would you have been better off starting your business in China than here, given that a lot of the manufacturing happens there?
It's definitely a different market. The products that we import, they couldn't be used in China. Like, it's basically the motorcycles, they're used mainly for recreational. They're not for road usage. However, I found that starting a business at a young age in Australia, I found it a great country to start the business in terms of there hasn't been many restraints. People are willing to give us advice when we seek it. However, the one thing that I guess we have sort of came to the realisation of just recently is more just in our product rather than, I guess, markets in general, is that we are sort of fairly restricted here just because of the population. We're hoping this year to sell around about 2,000 pieces of these newly developed models. And after doing some research and getting the interest that we've got internationally, like, we reckon we can probably sell 8,000 overseas.
Which is obviously a big boost.
Yeah, like, in particular Europe, like... Well, I guess you just have to look at the numbers. Like, we've got 20 or 22 million people here when you look at some of the populations overseas. But, like, as I say, that sort of reflects on our business because it is so niche. Population does have a large part to play.
So is it a fair statement of general principles for the three of you to say that while this might be a great place to start a business, if you really want to get serious and expand, it has to be outside of these 20 million people? I mean, you're doing it.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
Yeah. I think the opportunities overseas, there are, you know, Australia's only got 20 million people in the country, almost as big as America, and, you know, they've got that amount of people in one city, but we have to do it well in Australia to be successful, and I think business in Australia is done very well, and, you know, because the population isn't there, and there's a lot of people, and you can people to choose from, there's enough market for whether you do it well or you don't. And so you do have to do it well, which is makes Australian businesses do well overseas because we do it well.
Agree?
Definitely.
I'm going to open it up to questions from the floor in a moment, but The last one I want to ask each of you, and it's stealing Darren's thunder a little from the event later in the year, but it sounded good to me. The MBA is not worth the paper it's printed on, mainly because, you know, I haven't got one. My undergrad degree is barely worth the paper it's printed on. Do you agree with that proposition?
I do. In some cases, I don't know. I don't have an MBA and I don't have any formal qualifications, business qualifications. I learned all of my business acumen through experience and making mistakes, and from everybody I spoke to and networked with and read about and went to seminars and learned that way. I've employed MBAs and I've terminated MBAs.
Awesome.
I don't have any working for me now.
Well, I guess that answers that question then.
And I think that an MBA is a wonderful qualification with experience.
School of Hard Knocks.
Well, I think you really do need to have experience as well. But I think not having qualifications is no reason why you can't be successful and do something. So if you have a passion and a burning desire to create something, don't let qualifications or the situation you are in your life stop you from going ahead and doing it.
David?
I'm biased.
You've got one.
Yeah, I'm an MBA. but apart from my personal views, if you look at the statistics now, and this supports the view that the world is getting far more complex. If you look at the list of upstarts that BRW would list, and you compare the lists today, or the most recent list, to that 10 years ago, you will find that a majority of entrepreneurs are professionally trained. They have MBAs. They have higher degrees. That stands to reason for me. It's not your license to play. It's not a license to play. However, it gives you things that you need more of now. We talked about globalization. We talked about offshore markets. We talk about technology. The world is far more complex. An MBA sets you up to at least appreciate some of those aspects. But alone doesn't... My MBA, speaking from personal experience, doesn't cut it alone. If I couple it with the things that I've been doing since I was a kid, in playing around and getting along and thinking about the possibilities and giving it a go, it starts to make sense for me. I wouldn't have been able to do the things that I'd done and the things that we're doing now as a group. My colleagues and I are building a wonderful enterprise. Wouldn't be able to do any of that if one of the elements was missing. If I didn't have that tertiary education and if I didn't have the School of Hard Knocks experience. You know, I grew up in Broadmeadows. A great day for me was coming home and not being punched up, you know. It was one of those things. So it is a combination of the two. It's worth a lot to the people who can use it and apply it in a special way. And if you see the world spin and approach it and collaborate with others and use those skills and abilities, I think you'll do really well.
So having said all of that, do you think you need an MBA in the years to come, Michael?
I agree with David there. Like, if you can apply an MBA, then yeah, it's definitely going to be beneficial to you. But I think what separates, I guess, in some cases, an MBA student or an MBA graduate from an entrepreneur are the characteristics. And even if you don't have these, I guess, unique characteristics that these entrepreneurs have, you can go and do an MBA, but you're not going to be an entrepreneur. And I know that they're two different things. So, like, I guess in getting an MBA, like, they can be very helpful in helping you find a job and probably being successful in life. But unless you have these characteristics that people are born with, then I still don't think you'll be an entrepreneur.